From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of March 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And Mike Barwinski, a senior trader with Louis Dreyfus Commodities, will join us to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, if implemented, Brazil could become the first country to apply the cross-retaliation provisions of the WTO rulebook. The CFTC is planning to make a rule change related to high-frequency trading. The move should ensure all market participants have equal access to data. And the Senate is taking aim at the value of Chinese currency. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then to follow up on the currency issue, we'll explore how the value of the dollar doesn't really have much influence on corn exports. That's what I said, not much influence. Daryl Good will provide the statistical proof. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids. Lernard Seed Service provides information and services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at 487, up 7 3/4. The harvest month July at $4.99 3/4, up 7 3/4 as well. July wheat in Kansas City for the soft red at $5.05, up 7 for the day. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, the nearby May at 366 3/4 settlement price, up 3.5. July at 377 3/4, 3.5 higher. September futures at $3.87 1/4, up 3.5, and December at $3.96 3/4, 3 3/4 higher. March corn at $4.08 1/4 for 2010, up 4 cents. May soybean futures $9.45, the gain 15 cents today. July at $9.52 3/4, up 15 1/4. August at $9.50 1/4, up 14 3/4, and September $9.35 3/4, up 14 1/4. November soybeans at $9.26, up 12 for the day. May bean meal at $2.61.50, up $3.90. The May bean oil at $39.37, up 62. April live cattle futures 95.47 1/2, down 17 1/2. The June at 93.62 1/2, 2 1/2 lower. March feeders at 102.95, up a nickel, and April lean hogs at 71.75, down a nickel. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $81.80 a barrel, up $2 in the April. The May up $1.90 at $82 even. April futures at $1.54 1/2 in the ethanol, just 0.5 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.35 6/10, down 3 5/10. The RBOB at $2.27 7/10, up 5 4/10 a gallon. And the April heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.11 7/10. A cent, up 5 9/10 for the day. Gold futures at $1,122.20, $17.10 higher on the afternoon. And the Dow at 10,658 is up $16.40. The U.S. dollar at 79.76 is down 0.48. The CRB index at 273.54 is up 2.75 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. As prepared by our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight in west central and southwestern Illinois should be mostly cloudy, elsewhere partly cloudy. That's for this evening. Lows will range from 30 in northeastern Indiana to 40 in west central and southern Illinois. Tomorrow, he says, in west central and southern Illinois and far southern Indiana, mostly cloudy skies. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs generally will range between 58 and 63. A bit colder in the low 50s along the Lake Michigan shoreline. The extended forecast says dry and mild weather is expected through Friday. High temps today and tomorrow mostly in the 50s and the 60s. Thursday and Friday mostly in the 60s. Lows this week between the 30s and the 40s. Some rain likely this weekend. First with scattered showers and thunderstorms moving in on Saturday. And then a bit of widespread rain Saturday night into Sunday. We'll have more complete details when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the line with us to take a look at what happened in the agricultural futures markets, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
I take a day off and the market goes apparently up yesterday nicely and then again higher today. Is that right?
Well, you know, we got a little reaction here today to a couple things. First off, the dollar under pressure. Down 47 as we speak here now, and the crude oil up over $2. That, of course, be on the outside of things. So we had very light trade yesterday, volume and volatility very low. And as you know, we come into today, then we got a little bit of news out of the Dow Jones and S&P's rated the Greece situation, their bonds a little better with their plan. They give them a B-plus and A-minus rating. So that, of course, firmed up the euro-dollar against the dollar. We also had rumors that Brazilian farmers are being stubborn holders of beans. We got down to a point where we were somewhat oversold, and the 18-day cycles were breaking into the 6-day ones along the way, sort of bottomed out yesterday and seemed to be turning around a little bit for the short period up also. So all those things thrown together, why we saw a little bit of an update today, Todd.
Yeah, if we take a look at the daily charts, kind of fun to look. There's a little spike low there on, what, Friday, and then we have a gap yesterday higher and continued that today. You talked about low volatility, so that generally says there's not much behind it. Can there be a bigger push or not?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be a little bit self-fulfilling as we close above a few spots here. We saw a couple of the, you know, major advisory firms that backed out of some of their bean hedges today when we were closing above 925 in the November beans. So a little bit of that, you know, helps push things on up too. The talk that the weather, that we could see some flooding by NOAA here, wet conditions in Iowa, Minnesota, and down through that area of the Red River Valley because of the large amount of snow to melt off. That, of course, puts a little bit of attitude towards things also. But I think more so is that we just were waiting on to see what the acreage reports come out. You know, we got some numbers today from the Reuters Summit things there that way. So, you know, Rich Feltus made his guess and said that we're going to plant 89.75 million acres of corn and 78 million acres of beans. Dan Bassey from Ag Resource said 89.3 million acres of corn and 78.7 of beans. And if we remember the agricultural meeting there in February said 89 million corn and 77 beans. And last year, just to keep it in perspective, we had 86.5 million acres of corn and 77.5 million acres of beans. So, you know, a little bit, some of them thinking the bean stocks continuing to stay tight through the world. So that's where we saw the little bit of push there, Todd.
All right. Just one little note. I said volatility. Of course, I meant volume in that last question. But you got the gist of it, that there was a low volume and that you had suggested that meant yesterday's trade probably had less push behind it. The numbers today from Dan Bassey, and from Rich Feltus, Ag Resource, and from, oh my gosh, I can't remember where Rich is from. I'm sorry, that slips my mind, but I'll come up with it here in a bit.
Stone.
Yes, that's right. FC Stone. No, that's not
correct. MF Global.
MF Global. Thank you. Anyway, those numbers a little bit high. Producers will be wondering as they're looking out at their a really sunshiny and beautiful day. Probably pulled machinery out of the shed to at least look at it. I would think whether or not they will get into the field at this point and how they're going to get that many acres in the ground, given the tillage work or not so much tillage work that they'll be able to put. They'll be able to do this spring, and I think it's the latter. It's not whether they'll get tillage done. It's lack of tillage that they'll have, and all those corn stalks that are out there, and how they're going to manage to put that many of either of those crops in the ground.
It's called big machinery, Todd.
We
have shortened the time that it takes to get a lot of things done, but it also we've taken a little more time. We got to firm up the soil for that big machinery without doing some compaction problems too. So, you know, maybe a lot of times that big machinery, it'd be better if we stayed off it for a day longer than we do most times.
I think a little later in the program, in fact, I know a bit later in the program when we talk to Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, he says that it looks like we're setting up for an early spring pattern. Have you been talking to many people about what that means, and does that sound right from the meteorologist and folks you've been talking to?
Well, there was old sayings from my two grandfathers. Basically, early Easter generally means an early spring. Number one, that goes along with what you just said. Number two, if you looked at some of NOAA's reports this morning, basically they were talking about possible flooding, but it's going to be happening a couple weeks earlier than it did last year and going to give us more time to dry off and get ready for things if that does happen, the snow melts and what goes that way. So that does pretend to a little earlier field work than last year.
All right. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you much. That's Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Dave Dickey will be here in a moment to take a look at the agricultural newscast, but first a reminder that Dave and Jackie Vakes and Steve Erdman, Merrill Crowley and Jerry Goodell will all be in Mazan tonight at the American Legion Post for a 6:30 p.m. Ag Outlook panel. Actually, pizza at 6:30, the Ag Outlook panel at 7. It's sponsored by the Grundy County Farm Bureau. Again, that's Jackie Vakes, Steve Erdman, Merrill Crowley, Jerry Goodell. They'll be in Mazan tonight at the American Legion Post. The Ag Outlook panel starts at 7 p.m., and it's free and open to the public. Now here's Dave with the Ag News.
In agricultural news, Brazil revealed on Monday a preliminary list of U.S. patents and intellectual property rights it could restrict unless both countries settle a long-standing dispute over U.S. cotton aid. It is the second set of measures Brazil has unveiled in a week to pressure Washington to obey a ruling by the World Trade Organization that found the U.S. cotton subsidies and export credit guarantee program illegal. Brazil would become the first country ever to apply cross-retaliation under WTO rules. The new measures, which are subject to public hearings for 20 days, allow Brazil's government to anticipate the expiration of U.S. patents on pharmaceuticals, chemicals, and biotechnology that would allow Brazilian companies to start producing equivalent drugs earlier than expected. They would also allow Brazil to issue compulsory licenses without compensation in the drugs, chemical, music, and audiovisual industries. Total retaliation between both series of measures would be $829 million. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission says it will propose a rule to ensure market participants have equal access to data. The move, aimed at high-frequency traders, is another small step for a regulator that has so far said only that it was looking into the issue. High-frequency trading is where banks, hedge funds, and proprietary firms use algorithms to make markets and earn thin profits from tiny imbalances. It is estimated to account for some 40% of all U.S. futures trading. A new bipartisan bill to be introduced in the Senate calls for China to face stiff new U.S. penalties if it fails to revalue its currency. Senators Charles Schumer, a member of the Democratic leadership, and Lindsey Graham, a South Carolina Republican, have scheduled a news conference today to discuss the new legislation. The Labor Department today says that U.S. import prices fell 0.3% in February, led by a drop in prices for crude and other petroleum products. It was the first monthly decline since July. However, export prices fell 0.5% in February. A 3.8% drop in prices of agricultural exports and food, feeds, and beverages helped pull down the export price index. And Saudi Arabia's oil minister says he expects OPEC oil production to remain steady for the rest of the year. The comments come as oil ministers for the 12-nation production group prepare to meet for talks on output. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. A reminder, you can see Dave and Jackie Fake, Steve Erdman, Merrill Crowley, and Jerry Goodell tonight in Mazan. It's sponsored by the Grundy County Farm Bureau. They'll be at the American Legion Post. Pizza at 6:30, the Ag Outlook panel at 7 o'clock. It's free and open to the public. Now up next, it's not been uncommon for daily fluctuations in corn prices to be attributed the fluctuations in the value of the U.S. dollar relative to other currencies. So what's the connection? Well, I'll have more with Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. From the side of the importer of U.S. corn, writes University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good on the FarmDoc website, a lower valued dollar in relation to the currency of that country, all else equal, is in effect a reduction in the price of corn. Now, a lower price to the importer might be expected to result in larger imports. For the U.S. market, larger exports at the same nominal price of corn is, in effect, an increase in demand. That is, there's an upward shift in the demand curve for U.S. corn. In turn, the increase in demand results in a higher equilibrium price for corn. Theoretically, says Good, a lower valued U.S. dollar then should result in larger exports and a higher nominal price in the United States, assuming no change in other price factors. Proving this relationship is a bit of a problem.
The relationship between the value of the dollar and corn exports is a little hard to identify. For the 10 marketing years from 1999 through 2008, we do find a very low correlation between the two variables. However, that is not the proper relationship to examine because it violates the assumption of all other factors being equal. A proper analysis should try to isolate the impact of the value of the dollar from the impact of other factors.
One of the factual revelations in the historic corn export data is that exports to the largest importer of U.S. corn, Japan, are remarkably constant from year to year. It's well known that Japan bases its corn purchases on the feed needs of its domestic livestock industry, despite, for the most part, the price and the exchange rate.
Examining the relationship between exports of U.S. corn to destinations other than Japan and the value of the dollar reveals a negative correlation of about 0.4. The direction of the relationship is as expected and is relatively strong, but that simple relationship ignores the impact of other factors that might influence exports of U.S. corn. Adding those factors to the analysis fails to yield a strong relationship between exports and the value of the U.S. dollar.
A second point about the effect of the value of the dollar on corn prices, argues Good, is that export market is now a relatively small portion of the U.S. corn market. Exports this year, for example, are expected to account for only 15% of the total consumption of U.S. corn. Exports to destinations other than Japan may account for only 10 to 11% of that 15%. So consequently, even if the influence of the dollar's value on exports is stronger than suggested in his writings, the impact on the price of corn, says the ag economist, is likely relatively small.
In conclusion, it appears that the impact of the value of the U.S. dollar on the value of corn may be less than implied by daily market commentary. The direct cause and effect relationship is relatively weak.
There may be some recent economic relationship between the value of the U.S. dollar and crude oil prices, concedes Daryl Good, which impacts the value of ethanol and therefore corn. The value of the U.S. dollar and commodity prices may also be correlated to some degree in the current economic environment, as expectations about world economies influence both the value of the dollar and decisions about investments in commodities in general. In any case, it's unlikely that the corn market will completely ignore currency values in the price discovery process, even if the relationship is weak. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
We would like to thank these sponsors who helped support the recent WILL 20th Annual All-Day Ag Outlook Meeting and all of our agricultural programs on air and online: Strategic Farm Marketing, Stuart Peterson, ADM, Risk Management Commodities, and Pioneer Seeds. Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On a Tuesday afternoon, we always take a look at the agricultural energy markets. Once a month, we're joined by Mark Barwinski. He's a senior trader at Louis Dreyfus, located in Kansas City, at the Kansas City Board of Trade. Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Todd.
Hey, can you take a look around the ethanol industry as a whole, not just within Louis Dreyfus and the plants that you manage, but the ethanol industry as a whole, and give me a quick assessment of its health at this point in time?
I'd say it's teetering on the brink right now. Q4, a lot of plants had very healthy margins, but once we started the new year, things just kind of took a nosedive. And here in the last few weeks, not only at most plants that we calculate the margins for, they're barely at break even. So and that's assuming that you're managing, you know, all of your costs very well and are up to date on all of your inputs and outputs.
And so we've seen these plants that have closed, California in particular, some other plants. Actually, there are a number of plants that are closed. Is it a matter, and you say teetering, but is it a matter of the whole industry, or is it just a matter of efficiencies within the industry? So California is too far away from the corn crop. Others may be too small in size to really be economic to run at this point. Or is there some endemic problem underneath the industry?
No, I think you're right. I agree that, you know, the plants in California, those plants that just have poor efficiencies, aren't managed well, are going to be the ones that are going to go. You certainly don't need to have a situation like last year where you shut off, you know, 20% of the industry. Obviously, Verison was a large chunk of that, but you still had a large large amount of production capacity down. I don't think you're going to need to nearly reach that level again to get us back here. You're definitely going to have to shut off, you know, your destination plants in Texas and California and New York. But, I think most of your Midwestern plants will still operate at these levels.
So what is it that these plants need to happen to make them make their margins better again? What are the variables that you look out at and you can see changing in your favor?
I think a corn basis for sure is one variable. You know, at least that we've seen is it's tough to buy corn from the farmers in the interior even today, with the corn prices still holding on fairly well. So I think corn base is going to need to drop here a little bit, and that would be a big boost to your ethanol producer, because right now the ethanol, you know, which is obviously their main source of income, is just not pulling its weight to get these guys to make enough money to run.
But this is a fluctuation that you've learned to anticipate just a bit. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you need to, you know, you have to kind of look forward a bit and see what the forward curve shows on to expect this that this might come up soon.
Mike, thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Mike Barwinski is a senior trader at Louis Dreyfus, located at the Kansas City Board of Trade in Kansas City, Missouri. Our thanks to him for taking time out this afternoon to talk about the agricultural energy market. When we return, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming will be here on the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Pat Quinn says he's meeting with lawmakers to try to persuade them to back his income tax increase. Quinn planned to head to Springfield today after visiting a community college in Cicero. The Chicago Democrat also suggested lawmakers should skip their upcoming spring break to vote on his tax increase. He says Democrats who control the legislature should vote to pass it on their own if that's what it takes. No metro area in Illinois escaped higher unemployment rates in January. The jobless rate for the Champaign-Urbana area jumped to 11% compared to 8.9% in December and 7.1% a year ago. Danville's unemployment rate hit 15% in January, while it checked in at 14.4% in Decatur. The State Department of Employment Security says the Champaign-Urbana area has lost 6,300 jobs in the past year. Rockford has the highest jobless rate in the state, nearing 20%. DES Director Maureen O'Donnell says Illinois job creation could lag even when economies in other states start to rebound. An Illinois Supreme Court decision anticipated in 2 days could end years of legal battles over whether Urbana's Provena Covenant Medical Center should pay county property taxes. 6 years ago, the State Department of Revenue upheld Champaign County's decision to pull Provena's tax-exempt status as a not-for-profit hospital because of a shortfall in charitable care. Since then, the case has been upheld, then reversed by lower courts. Several million dollars in back tax payments hang in the balance, as the Illinois Supreme Court expects to issue its opinion Thursday morning. In Evansville, Indiana, a proposal for tighter limits on smoking in restaurants and bars faces an uncertain future after stalling in the city council last night. The vote was 4-4 with one councilman absent. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, is here to tell us all about a gorgeous day in the Midwest and what might be coming here in the very near future. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
It is a beautiful day right here in East Central Illinois. Can we expect more, maybe?
Oh, yeah. It is certainly feeling like March, a little bit like early spring out there, and it is going to continue to be nice here for another couple of days. There is a system that will be moving in just in time to ruin everybody's weekend, with a real good chance that the rain will go across many areas of the Corn Belt and Midwest. On the backside of the system, it will be rain turning to snow, especially across portions of Nebraska and Iowa. So enjoy the nice weather, because the weekend will trend colder and wet.
And after we get through the weekend, does that persist, the cold and wet, or not?
Well, we're going to see, a textbook early spring pattern. We're going to have these periods of warmer weather followed by colder, wet weather. And so after the system moves out this weekend, early next week we'll bring a warm-up. Then we'll have another storm system bring cool, wet weather our way towards the middle of next week, probably around Wednesday, Thursday, Friday time frame. And I expect this sort of up-and-down pattern to be with us probably through the whole month of March. But, hey, it's spring. That's what we expect, sort of the battle between the changing seasons. And every time there's a battle between the cold and the warm, there's going to be some wet weather.
I take it we've been talking about the Corn Belt. Most of the activity this time of the year will be taking place in the Delta region. They've been wet. Will they dry out enough to get started?
Well, I think they're going to have some opportunity to, in the short term especially, being able to see some decent weather. But some of the weather that will hit the Midwest and Corn Belt will drag showers and thunderstorms across the Delta. So they are going to be fighting periods of rain. Nothing that will be extended, nothing more that will last a day or two, but there will be frequent opportunities for rain in the Delta states as well.
We'll move to South America in just a bit, but could you quickly take a look at China and tell me how they're setting up for their planting season?
Well, as we look over at China's weather, a lot like what we're going to have here in the U.S., is we're going to be looking at a pretty active weather pattern, especially when we look ahead into mid to late next week. We see a weather system, but when we average all the precipitation that may fall over the next 10 days, we only see a couple of areas that are expecting above normal amounts of rainfall and snowfall across China. So they're looking at what should be some fairly favorable conditions, other than a typical March pattern.
And then harvest weather in South America.
Looks a little damp, especially in portions of Brazil and northern and central areas of Argentina. Argentina probably looks at the best chance of being moist, especially the central and northern areas. Some of the central areas of Brazil can expect some moisture as well. So there might be some delays due to a little bit of rain. Nothing that I would call excessive, however.
Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.